Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is not Kate Sloan. Kate is not here today, but I am trying to do her spiel for her. I am Bex Caputo. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I was recently diagnosed with ADHD, so I have my friend on here who knows the most out of ADHD out of anyone I know, is here to talk to me about it. Hey friend, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, I'm Rachel Rose. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a chronically ill and disabled sex educator and graphic designer. I talk a lot about chronic illness, disability, and sexuality, and also ADHD, because we both probably had it our whole lives, but I've known about it for the last 20 years or so. Had to do a lot of navigating around it.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that in a little bit, because I have a lot of feelings about being diagnosed in adulthood. But before we get there, one of the things that I realized when I started, because I actually found my diagnosis partially through talking to you and a lot of other ADHD advocates online, people who talk about this shit, and I just started seeing my own experience reflected back at me. But the first couple of times I saw it, like, I saw mentions of executive dysfunction and things, and I was like, oh, I, like, looked into it, and I was like, oh, that's for folks with ADHD. I don't have that. Because I'm picturing these ideas of these, like, hyperactive little boys. Like, that's the picture you get with ADHD. And I wasn't diagnosed as a kid. I got relatively decent grades in school, solid A's and B's most of the way through school and college. So I figured no way that can be me. And then I started looking into it and realized that there's a lot more to ADHD than I think what a lot of people see. So I'm curious if you could talk to me a little bit about how an ADHD brain works differently than a neurotypical brain.
So funny thing is, like, just what you said, like, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Even though I was diagnosed at like 12, but I only got diagnosed because my little brother had it. So they decided to, like, oh, we'll check her too. And I think I had decided, like, as a kid that I was like, I don't actually think I have it, but I find, like, the Adderall makes it easier for me to get work done. So, like, I'll just go with it. And I was saying this way into, like, my late 20s. And it's only in the last, like, 5 years or so that I was like, oh, crap, I'm the poster child for this. Like, because I learned more about it because I had the same idea you did. I wasn't hyperactive like my brother was. And so I just figured, like, they had misdiagnosed me, but that, like, it kind of worked out in my favor, and so I went with it.
This Adderall stuff's great.
I was like, this is pretty helpful stuff. I'll stick with this. So the little bit of the differences between how ADHD brains work is that, so one, it seems to me, from all the research I've done, and I'm a huge nerd, so I do a ton of research on these things, that there is a little bit of, like, they're still learning. There's still a lot they haven't learned, especially in people who were assigned female at birth. But generally how brains work, how ADHD brains work, it's caused by a deficiency of some neurotransmitters. And those are, you know, chemicals that help your brain do what it does. Researchers believe that norepinephrine and dopamine are responsible for ADHD. Norepinephrine, the base building blocks of that come from something called DOPA, which then becomes dopamine, and that's converted into norepinephrine. So they don't know yet whether it's a deficiency of norepinephrine or of, like, the things that go and make up norepinephrine, which would be DOPA and dopamine. But it's some combination of those three things is what they believe.
Yeah. And those are, like, so dopamine is, like, one of the feel-good chemicals, right?
It is.
That's the one that gives you warm fuzzies when you get cool stuff done.
It's like the sense of motivation, and it helps you get things done and helps you with, like, executive functioning, which is why sometimes when we don't have enough, or at least it's thought, this is the things it's thought to do. So when we don't have enough, we're like, oh, so ADHD brains, kind of the way they work is, like, you need, so, like, neurotypical brains need, like, you know, let's say just some number, whatever, of this much chemical in order to be like, this is the thing I need to get done. And then you have ADHD brains, and they need, because they have a deficiency, they need more, you know, more incentive in order to get to the same level of dopamine. Or the same level of brain chemicals in order to make it work. So let's say you have a bill you have to pay and you have money for it, but you just can't seem to get yourself to do it.
Oh my God, all the time.
Because this is me on, like, a normal basis. And it wasn't until, this actually happened last week, and it was this bill that's sitting in a pile of things and I just forgot to get to it or didn't want to. And then it showed up in my credit report. You know, I paid that bill in 30 seconds. Yeah. And it was because suddenly I had the incentive I needed for my brain to be like, listen, this is the thing you have to do right now. And so that's what brains need more, ADHD brains need more stimulation to get to the same like level of getting things done.
Yeah, one of the things, one of the resources you gave me is this YouTube channel called How to ADHD, which is amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah, and the person who runs it talks a lot about how it's things need to be either fun or have like a heavy deadline or an emergency or be interesting or be challenging. Yep. Because, and for me, what those have in common is that they will engage my brain. Like, I worked retail, and my favorite day was Black Friday, because every part of my brain was engaged in making shit happen. Mm-hmm. I could, and for me, my experience of ADHD is that, like, it's not that I can't focus, it's that I can focus on everything. Mm. Like, for years, I've been explaining the inside of my brain as, like, standing in the middle of Times Square. Where everything is so interesting and it all wants my attention right now. Like, it's all designed entirely to capture my attention. and like, depending on the time of day, it might be easier or harder to focus, but everything is so exciting.
I totally relate. I asked my partner, my nesting partner, a while back to describe what he thinks the inside of my brain looks like. And he was like, it's like a whole room full of multicolored post-its and all the information's there, but you just have to locate it and it's all bright colors and nothing is organized.
Yeah.
Like, it's organized, but only in a way that you understand it. Nobody else would be able to figure it out. And so, like, it's kind of the same thing where, like, everything is there all the time. And it's not so much that you can't focus at all, it's that you can't direct your focus.
Yeah, and there are days where, like, with that post-its, I might feel like I'm standing inside of a room with post-its on every wall, and I'm like, okay, but the post-its in that corner are for this project, and the post-its over there, and, like, I can kind of get it. And other days, it's like the post-its are on all of the walls and all over me and my face and, like, stacked on top of each other, and, like, they're not color-coded anymore, now they're all gray, and I'm like, shit, I don't know. I could pick up any post-it, and it could literally be part of any project, and I have no idea.
I get that. I sometimes feel like the post-its are breeding somehow, and someone has moved them around in a way that I am not familiar with, and I'm just like, but I know this thing, but I don't know this. Like, it's just, it's, the information is there somewhere, but it's temporarily misplaced or lost, or the, like, the ability to access the things I need aren't there. That kind of,
yeah,
kind of gets in the way a little bit. I kind of think of ADHD not so much as, like, I mean, I think I have a personal issue with, I hate how negative all the research, even the stuff that's meant to seem positive, comes across really negative.
Yeah.
But I don't see it so much as a problem, just as, like, a brain style, and maybe a brain style that doesn't necessarily mesh super well with our current culture. Which can make it challenging, but I don't really see it as a problem. I, like, all the information's there. I also got great grades in school and stuff like that. It's just the way my brain works isn't the same as someone who's neurotypical.
Yeah, and I find my brain is really well suited for a lot of tasks. Like, my whole life I've been talked about as being, like, great at creative problem solving or brainstorming ideas, or, like, my brain makes connections in ways differently than other people's sometimes. And I constantly have people my whole life have been like, oh, I've never thought about it that way. And getting this diagnosis is like, oh, your brain literally has not thought in that way. Or, like, I'll feel like I'll blow through so many thoughts that I lose half of them, which is mind-numbing sometimes, because I think I'm very clever, so I hate that I forget half of the things I think of.
You're very clever.
But I've been told I think too much, like, I spend too much time thinking about things, but I just find them fascinating, so I spend more time thinking on them, and go to places that people don't sometimes. So I definitely feel like the things that people have described as symptoms of ADHD are very much just a core part of how my brain works. And I think part of what was so frustrating for this diagnosis for me was realizing how much, like, not only am I the poster child for this, but, like, I've had language for this my whole life. Like, things I've described to people. I distinctly remember being in school and having a teacher ask me, like, listen, you did this one project and it was phenomenal. You did so well on this, but you don't do any of the other projects for me. Why not? And my little kid brain was like, well, they were boring. And I didn't think I was being insulting. I really didn't. She was being, like, she took me to side after class, and I could tell she was trying to, like, connect with me, so I was trying to be honest with her, and I was like, listen, like, schoolwork isn't supposed to be fun, it's schoolwork, but the honest answer is, I can't do it, because there's no incentive, I'm still getting Bs, I'm still fine, and it's not interesting, and there is nothing that can compel my brain to do this until the end of the semester when you're hanging over me and I have to make up a bunch of projects. Like, that's just how this is going to happen. But instead of, like, recognizing that, like, oh, hey, maybe this is, like, we need to engage this kid's brain differently, because I've been told, you know, all through school, they were like, oh, he's just bored. He could do better if he wasn't so bored. And it's like, well, maybe do something about that. Like, maybe notice that, maybe engage that. And instead, that teacher kicked me out of AP that year, that semester, and put me back into regular class after that, where I was more bored.
Wow, that seems like definitely not the right response. Whether or not you had ADHD, that doesn't seem like a great teacher response.
I don't know that it was a direct response, but after I told her projects were boring, she was not nice to me anymore and did not recommend me for honors, and I was convinced ever since. I was like, maybe I could have been in AP English, except...
Yikes. No, I'm the same way. Like, and ADHD brains, like, they kind of play by their own rules. We're highly motivated by, like, internal motivation, even if we don't recognize it, because it's more satisfying, and we're bored. I mean, listen, there's a lot of things that bore me that I have just, I mean, God, it'll take me hours to respond to an email, but I could dive into, like, creating an entire new business in, like, 10 minutes. Because it's more interesting to me, or, like, you know, want to learn all about a new topic I want to learn about, like, or a new art project. And, like, what you said, honestly, being creative and brainstorming is, like, it's like ADHD superpowers almost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't, my partner's neurotypical, and he'll constantly, like, he'll have an issue. He'll be like, oh, I couldn't do this thing you asked me to do because of these things. And I'll be like, oh, but did you think of this, 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 and this? And he's like, no, that never occurred to me at all. Like, and I was just like, oh, we'll give one of those a shot, and, like, send him off on his way. And my brain makes connections and comes up with ideas that a lot of other people don't. And I think that's kind of awesome.
And I think it's just part of, because our brains want to keep themselves occupied. Like, we don't do well being stagnant and finding ways to engage ADHD brains, I think, is really powerful and, like, really helpful. Is just keeping us engaged with really thoughtful things. I don't know, I went off on a tangent because I have ADHD, but here we are.
Same. No, I get the same. I always joke about how it's kind of like, my brain is kind of like a computer, but it's, like, constantly running background tasks. Because I will be doing something and I'll be like, and, like, sometimes I forget that no one else can hear my internal thoughts. So I'll start a conversation in the middle of a thought, and I usually get a lot of really confused looks around me, but it's because my brain is constantly thinking of things. So, like, yeah, we might not be talking about that thing, but, like, in addition to the conversation we're having, I'm having five more mental internal monologues happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes annoying, though.
Exactly. Well, I was going to say that's also why sometimes it's way easier for me to focus with a TV show I've seen 1,000 times in the background. Because that little part of my brain that would be bouncing around thinking of a million different things and constantly poking the part of my brain that's focusing and being like, oh, wait, did you think of, oh, by the way, what about this, is now just like watching House. It's like putting a toddler down in front of the TV and being like, yo, chill for a minute. I have shit to do.
I do feel like you come up with a lot of, like, having ADHD, you end up coming up with, like, a lot of life hacks for how to manage stuff. So, like, I'm nerdy in all of the ways, and including, like, I think I've tried every craft project known to man, but like most that came from, like, I couldn't focus on TV until I was doing something else with my hands.
Yeah.
So, like, I got really into crocheting at one point. Another one, I got into embroidery, and another one, I got into, like, I don't know, 12 other projects. I don't remember. Something I probably didn't finish. But yeah, they make it, it actually makes it easier to focus.
Yeah. I couldn't watch movies until I started smoking weed because I just didn't, I couldn't sit still. Not have the bandwidth.
Do you watch it with subtitles on?
No.
I've weirdly learned a lot of people with ADHD, and I didn't know anybody else but me did this until I like had a couple friends over and they were like, oh, I do this too. Somewhat hearing related, but like it also just makes it easier to focus when I can read what the words are.
Yeah. I stopped recently, and there's no way to tell this story without sounding pretentious, but here we are. I've found that the way to engage my brain more and enjoy media is smoking, which chills me out and like gets that nervous energy out of me and allows me to just sit the fuck down. But I get really meta about thinking about the storyline and the acting and the character choices. So instead of reading the subtitles, I focus on things like nuances of facial expression and what's happening in the background and what the characters you're not supposed to be looking at are doing and the faces they're making. So I don't watch subtitles anymore because they distract me from all that nerdy shit that I get into.
That's not pretentious. I'm like jealous you can focus on that many things at once. I used to be able to. I also have on top of ADHD a bunch of brain fog from my other chronic health stuff. So like it's definitely changed how I've been able to navigate ADHD and also gave it superpowers somehow. but that's another story. But like so like I don't think I could focus on that many things right now at once.
Yeah.
But like I definitely am like, wow, on like the second or third watch, if I ever bothered to watch something that many times, and to be honest, it's a pretty challenging thing to get myself to do. I would totally, like, that's what I like doing, is pay attention to, like, how they did things and why they did it this way and where the foreshadowing was, so.
My favorite is the rewatch of, like, the first either few episodes or season of a show after I finished it, where I get to go back and see, like, what did they choose to show me first to introduce this character to me? Or, like, how have they developed over time? Or how did they tease at that stuff? But now we're getting down a media nerd tangent. We want to talk about ADHD.
Right. So this is exactly what ADHD looks like.
Yes.
We're just showing it in practice.
I mean, I figured this episode would be great for that, too. But we talked a little bit about how you were only diagnosed because you said your brother was, and I wasn't diagnosed until I looked into this shit and read about ADHD and saw other people using metaphors I've used my whole goddamn life and went, hey, have you considered? And we're not alone. I know statistically you are less likely to be diagnosed with ADHD if you're socialized as a girl and assigned female at birth. Even though the incidence of ADHD doesn't actually seem to be lower in girls, from what I've looked at. I wonder if you have any thoughts about why that happens.
Oh, I have so many thoughts.
Me too.
Okay. So yeah, from what I found, it statistically impacts people of all genders the same at the same rate. Mm-hmm. But people who are socialized as boys are 3 times more likely to be screened than people who are socialized as girls, which is like a huge discrepancy.
Yeah.
I actually found one statistic that said that this doctor who wrote a book all about girls who have ADHD wrote that 50 to 75% of girls or women or people who are just socialized as girls or women with ADHD have not been diagnosed, which I don't know where that number comes from, but I thought that was like a completely outrageous discrepancy between how people who are socialized as different genders are treated in this. And apparently she says that it comes from the fact that when the clinical studies, sorry, I told you I'm super nerdy. So when the clinical studies were done in the 70s on like trying to understand ADHD a little better, they were all done of young, very hyperactive white boys in the 1970s. And like, so a lot of the diagnostic criteria was built based on those clinical studies and it only reflected the people that they were actually studying.
Wild thought.
Shocking, right? there's a lot of...
Who'd have thunk? Science has bias.
Could it be like a little bit of sexism, perhaps?
Yeah.
And some other, some other isms, just throw it in there. But personally, I think that largely the way that people who are socialized as women or girls are socialized leads to less disruptive behaviors because we're like a lot of the behaviors that are more allowed or tolerated for boys aren't quite the same for girls. Like, you know, I even my family, who like wasn't particularly like, we're pretty like not old school in really any way, I would hear like, oh, that's not ladylike, when I'd burp or something like that. So I'm sure I heard it more as a little kid regarding like my behavior in a way that maybe boys did not, or my brother didn't. I don't really recall. But and like, also, they've been studying ADHD in little boys longer. Like, they've been doing it since the 70s. And like, I came across an article where someone was praising a doctor in 2003 about being the first to really look at how ADHD presents in girls. And I'm like, that was like, I wasn't like, that's not that long ago.
That's like, wild.
Like, someone just considered that, you know, hey, you know, it's maybe it's time we actually look at other genders and see what those look like.
Maybe things manifest differently in people who we treat differently.
Yeah.
Who'da thunk? And I think what you said about how we're socialized differently really resonates for me. Because I think, I think boys are given more permission to be loud and rambunctious, and oh, boys will be boys, and if boys are gonna misbehave, that's how. Whereas girls, not only are they taught to be quieter, but they're also taught to be a little more attentive of what's happening around them in the world, and a little bit more inclined to be, like, people pleasers. And so we recognize when all of that chaotic energy upsets other people. I think folks who are socialized as women are trained and conditioned to see that and adjust accordingly. Because that's just how our culture treats us. And I know for me, I definitely think there is some degree of hyperactivity that comes with my ADHD that I definitely didn't notice. Even think, like, I'm sitting here swinging my legs and tapping my feet the whole time I record the podcast. I, like, rock my chair back and forth, and Kate had to train me to holding my head more or less straightforward because I'm sitting still for an hour. But more than bouncing off the walls and being, like, this chaotic kid, I feel like I'm bouncing off the walls inside my own mind. All of that is turned inward and becomes very anxious, chaotic energy. I've described it as feeling like I'm going to vibrate out of my own skin, or, like, ever since I was a kid, I would tell people, oh, my body's exhausted, but my brain isn't. Like, oh, like, and they were separate entities with separate energy levels, and they don't always line up.
I'm sitting over here, like, I'm, like, making all these faces at you on like, we're in video chat, because I'm like, I see that too. Oh my God, I do that too. And it gets exciting to, like, because even, like, having discussed this with tons of friends, like, there's sometimes someone will say something in a way that, like, I've said it to myself, but I've never heard anybody else say, and it's just, like, so validating.
And it's those little analogies that you think describe a very, like, unique, specific experience, and you can see the moment where they click on someone else's face, and you're like, oh, that's not just a weird me thing. That's, we have science about this shit, and we have skills for coping with this shit, and they could have been accessible to me for the last 28 goddamn years of my life. And, like, I've known what I needed, and now I'm, like, getting on my soapbox now. But, like, I've felt some of the things that are really helpful for ADHD folks, because we have trouble keeping track of what we're doing, are things like checklists and externalizing, like, post-its and, like, very regimented organizational things and routines. And because motivation is sometimes hard, it can be easier to make things fun in stupid ways, like sticker charts and things that are great for incentivizing kids.
Gamifying things is great.
Yeah,
because that gives you
it fun.
That actually, I think I read an article related to, like, gamifying, like, apps and stuff, that actually says that, like, you get a hit of dopamine when you win something. So it works great for ADHDers too.
Yeah, I use Habitica, which is a gamification app, and I can feel the hit of dopamine when I push the little button. I have gotten nothing except a little digital pile of gold that I can use to buy fake little costumes for my character. But I know that my brain just likes that dopamine hit, so I've hacked my brain to incentivize myself to do the things I want. And, like, getting this diagnosis, I feel like I've been building a puzzle my whole life, and someone just showed me what the final puzzle looks like. Like, someone just showed me the box. And I was like, oh, that's what I'm making. Okay. shit, yeah, I can make that. I got like 70% of the way there already, but like, thanks, I guess. Because I felt drawn to all this stuff, but now I have the rules of the game I've been playing.
Yeah, it's kind of wild that I think that like having a diagnosis from a young age, even if I wasn't convinced that it was a real thing, or like that I had, not that it wasn't a real thing, that I had that necessarily, I think gave me such a more positive view of ADHD. Like, I know a lot of people have a lot of shame around it, and you know, a lot of shame about a lot of different aspects of it, and like that's something that I never really felt. Which I think is spectacular, but I think it's really unfortunate that I think I'm the anomaly with a lot of those things. It's because, like, at least from people I've talked to.
I mean, I've definitely struggled with that, like, prior to this, especially most recently, like, as I was looking into my mental health stuff specifically, and, like, honestly, as I parsed through my queerness and growing into adulthood and my transness and all of the other pressing issues, and got more to like the root of things and just moving through adulthood, wondering if I was lazy, if I was stupid, if I like, because there would be things where I was like, no, asshole, you know this information. I know you know this information. You have seen this a million times. Why are you making the same mistake? And it's like, you know, things like, there is a stop on my train that it's a fork, and 90% of the time I do not have to get off and turn there, but sometimes I do. And if I do, I will miss it every time. Like 75-80% of the time I will miss that stop. And the answer is telling Google to remind me to get off at that station. And I know that now because I know that task switching and routines and things are all part of the way ADHD brains work. But forever I was like, am I just an idiot? Like, how do I miss Queensboro Plaza every time I'm on the train? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's I think that's another thing that happens, not even particularly with you, but just in general with people who are socialized as girls, is that they don't get diagnosed because I think, so a lot of people tend to show more symptoms like when there's less structure in their life. So when they get to like college and stuff, a lot of times like all the coping mechanisms you develop kind of like suddenly they're not there because they don't work in the same way because your life has shifted. And so a lot of people then people socialize as girls tend to turn that stuff inward and think that there's something wrong with them, or they've already developed like all of these negative views because they've probably been told all the same things that you were saying to yourself. Sometimes people like are told that, like, well, why were you being so careless? Why are you being so selfish? Or why are you, you know, all these negative things? Why weren't you paying attention? And so,
or like,
instead
you
of,
don't care about your relationships because you don't, you're not showing up in the ways you want to, and like you'll just disappear because sometimes reaching out gets caught in that executive dysfunction thing,
and there's
where it becomes a big scary task, and it's just not going to get done for a little while,
or you forget that how much time has passed, to even reach out about it because So it's called, technically it's called time blindness. This like, not only is it a sense of like, it comes with ADHD. Like, not only does it like, it's not just a perception of time moving differently. Like, for you, time actually does pass differently, which is probably why I'm 5 minutes late for almost everything I've ever attended in my whole life. I literally just leave with that when I meet people. I'm like, I'm probably going to be 5 minutes late. I'll tell them 10 minutes and then I look good when I'm only 5 minutes late. Like, just align expectations or whatever, but
yeah
that's totally a part of it too. And so like I'll forget to call family members for like a week and a half because I have no idea a week and a half has passed, especially now that I work for myself at home. I'm like, every day kind of looks like I do different things during the day, but like, you know, they pass and there's not a whole lot of good indications of time, so
yeah, there's no routine to latch onto. It isn't like I've gone to the office 6 times, so.
And this meeting happened on Monday, and then there like aren't other people to reflect on as far as like as gauges of time. So like,
there's an episode. I think I've mentioned this to you before, but there's an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine where Jake Peralta is talking about Amy, and like one of them is going to get a job somewhere else or something, and he's like, "No, if I don't see you any day, I'll forget you exist." And like they're dating at this point, and she like looks at him like he's crazy, and then, you know, 2 minutes later Boyle comes in and is like, you can't leave. If you don't see me every day, you'll forget I exist. And, like, I've never felt so seen by, like, yeah, if things are not directly in front of me, they could have never happened until one day my brain finds that file and is like, by the way. And I'm like, oh my God, people. I love people.
Do you ever, like, get that where you suddenly have this thing where you panic that you didn't do this really important thing you've forgotten about for 3 weeks? And then I have to, like, I have to drop everything I'm doing to, like, go on my phone and be like, did I actually respond to that email? Did I just think about doing it really hard? Like, I'm, like, Rachel, thinking about it really hard does not mean you actually did it. Like, that's not how this works.
The number of times I open messaging apps and they have half-typed out messages in them from, like, days ago, and it's just, like, I've thought of that person again and want to tell them something else. I'm like, oh, fuck.
I don't know what it says, but I know in my text message to you, I have something typed right now that I never said. I started typing it earlier and got distracted.
It's okay. When I typed you to confirm this, I had to delete a message from like 2 days ago.
Now I want to know what it said.
I don't know that it was important.
I don't think what I've typed is important. It's just there. And I know that happens with a lot of my friends, and it's so much easier when you have like this shared... Like, not that somebody has to have ADHD to have a good relationship, but, like, it's so much easier when it's, like, a shared understanding of things. And so, like, I'm like, I'm sorry I didn't get back to you for a week, but, like, I accidentally deleted the notification from the front of my home screen. And so I forgot you existed. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't usually phrase it that way.
I get things done.
I have friends who are like, oh my God, how do you deal with having so many notifications? And I was like, well, because that is my functional brain. Like, this is... I was trying to end a phone call or something, and I somehow accidentally swiped down and hit the clear button and like by accident to all my notifications, and I was just like, no!
it's like my to-do list.
I have no idea. There must have been like 15 of them, and I don't know what half of them, I knew what half of them were. The other half are still a mystery. It's like, that was like a month ago.
Gone forever.
It must not have been that important. Nobody tried to follow up about it, so.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out one day. 3 weeks from now, and I'll be in the shower, and I'll be like, oh my God, I fucking forgot to respond to that. And it'll just be a panic moment. So, you know.
I'm curious. So we talked about, and I agree, I find it sometimes easier to work with people or talk to people whose brains work similarly, because I can say something and they just get it. Versus other times, like when I'm working with neurotypical people on things, sometimes I'll talk to them and be like, I have no idea how your brain works that way, but I believe you. Or like, I'll tell someone, I'll be like, you know, you want to meet, you know, in 2 weeks on Friday, and they'll be like, yeah, okay. And they won't write it down. I'm like, I trust you. But in my life, that would never happen. Like, if I don't write that down, this conversation didn't happen. But there is a degree of, like, when I'm talking to neurotypical folks where I'm like, I believe you that way of doing things is easier for you, but it just
I don't get
does
it,
not
though.
Click for me. Yeah. And I'm curious, you said your partner is neurotypical. If you have any advice for relationships between ADHD folks and neurotypical folks and how they can kind of, ADHD folks can kind of support themselves and their partners can support them in relationships like that.
Totally. Yeah, actually, my partner and I have been together, it'll be like almost 13 years, so it's been quite a while and a lot of navigating around like how utterly and completely different we are. He's a very logical, like science and math type person, and I'm like this very artsy, creative, like just I want to do 100 things at once, and they're all, you know, overlap. It's just, you know, all the things. just to speak to like how differently people's brains work too. I remember having this funny conversation with him when we first started dating, and we're like, you know, cuddling or whatever. And I just like did that typical, like, I feel like you see it in like rom-com type things. We're like, you know, so what are you thinking about? And he just looked at me and he goes, nothing. Why? And I was like, well, listen, like you're entitled to your privacy. You don't have to lie to me though. Like you can tell me you don't want to share with me what you're thinking about, but don't tell me nothing. That's just rude. And he was like, no, really, I'm not thinking of anything. And I was like, so wait, what do you mean? Like, how does this work? Are you thinking of like a dark room? Are you thinking of like a vacuum in space? Like, is it like I'm picturing?
What does nothingness look like? Like,
this ended up turning into like an hour long conversation because I could not grasp the concept that someone could think of nothing. Like at this point in my life, I actually thought that all intelligent people thought all of the time because that was my only experience with how my brain worked.
Yeah, I have at least 6 thoughts at any given moment.
Totally. And they're all competing for my attention.
I know.
I never know who will win.
Only two of them are really worth my attention. Like, one of them is like, that is a weird noise that a squirrel is making outside of my window. Let's make a 15-minute video of it. And like, it does not need, like, let's bond with this strange bird that I've found. Like, but that sometimes that will be the one that catches my brain.
You just don't have a lot of control over which of the six win sometimes. Like, that's,
yeah.
So actual suggestions to help people who are in these types of relationships would be one, like, I highly recommend the YouTube video I recommended to you, or the YouTube channel, How to ADHD. Was so actually my last therapist recommended it to me. She also had ADHD, and which was awesome. And it's honestly, they're short videos and they're really easy to digest. And they're really great at explaining things in a not shamey and super like interesting and scientific, but also really relatable way. And I think that like even watching
and compassionate,
it really is. The person who runs it does a really amazing job. And so I think that like even watching one or two of those videos so that you and your partners or like the ADHDer and the non-ADHDer have like a common language to talk about this stuff in can be really helpful. Because I think, like, I feel like doing all the sex ed stuff, like 99% of the time, my best recommendation is like have good communication, but you also need like a lingo or like a shared, like shared,
vocabulary.
That's the word I was looking for, to talk about these things in so that like you guys, that you can have a conversation that like really addresses things in a way that's not putting blame on anybody. So there's that. And then I also think that in explaining things and so people understand what's going on leads to a lot more empathy and patience. And that goes not just with ADHD, but I found that with like the whole laundry list of other medical conditions I've had is that when people understand them, they're way more patient about it, way more willing to understand. I mean, for example, if you're expecting an important phone call and it takes someone a week and a half to get back to you and you have no context, you're probably going to be annoyed. But if you found out that person had like some massive family emergency or got the flu, or there was a car accident, like you're suddenly going to be way more understanding of why they weren't able to call you back because you have the context that goes with it. You have a basis for offering that empathy and patience. Go ahead.
No, I think with that, what's helpful is like, because the ADHD version of that, it's really easy to assume that something didn't get done because either they forgot because they didn't care, or they're like actively choosing that they just don't feel like doing it and they're brushing you off and you're just not that important or whatever. Which in my experience, if there's something that isn't getting done for someone that I care about, I am like dying inside over it. Like it's I haven't forgotten about it. It's all I can think about and I can't do it.
Oh God,
like
I hate
it
that.
Has become entirely insurmountable. I'm well aware of, like, there are tasks from years ago that I know I've forgotten and I still have a pin in. Like, I can't manage to forget them, even though it's well past any point that I could reasonably do them.
Yep.
And then it sticks with you as, like, this failure, this time you let someone down, and that all builds up.
It totally does.
And I think being a, like, having the compassion to recognize that, like, they're really not trying to be a dick. Like, they really, a lot of times the ADHDer wants to do this thing just as much as you want them to.
Yeah, totally. I think, and for like, at least in my personal experiences, like the things I tend to run into are like other ADHD issue characteristics. So like my partner loves being on time. He's a very like left brain rigid type thinker. And I'm like, time is a construct. It doesn't even, like, how does it work? I don't understand it. It's exactly, it's very wibbly wobbly. Totally throws me. I think my brain categorizes time by emotions. So like whatever I felt strongly about happened more recently to me. And I have to like literally think about it really hard in order to like put things in like an actual chronological order. Mm-hmm. So like we're late for everything. So sometimes like, you can come up with like hacks for things like that. Having that basis of understanding helps too. But also with that or any of the other things that we've run into, usually if you're the partner of someone with ADHD, waiting until someone's in a good headspace and then bringing it up in like a kind and compassionate way And also maybe asking if there's anything you can, like, without, instead of putting blame on someone, be like, hey, I noticed this is really hard for you. Is there any way I can make this easier for you? You're getting the point across, but now it's like, now it's a team effort and not like someone's fault. So like, if my partner said to me like, hey, it really stresses me out when we're late going places. I know time management's not your thing. What can I do to help you be like, make it easier for you to be on time? And I'll be like, well, hey, can you let the dogs out first? Or can you give me like a 20-minute warning and like a 10-minute warning when we need to leave, so like I can, because I'll look at my phone and see the time and it'll have virtually no meaning to me. And so like, yeah, like going at it from that perspective where you can work together to figure out the things that like are causing tension can be a way better way to handle it.
That reminds me a lot of what Joella Nadi talks about with how a lot of relationships can become like, when you're dealing with relationships where one partner has depression, it can be helpful to be you and your partner versus the depression instead of the partner with the depression versus the other partner. And that's how a lot of dynamics can come. And I think that's true with a lot of mental health things, whereas you want to get on the same side as your partner. And I don't think necessarily you're versus the ADHD, because I think, we talked about earlier, ADHD is not necessarily like an enemy or something that needs to be overcome. But it is something that you need different tools for. And different resources. And I think partnering with your partner to create, to gamify some of the struggles, like we were talking about, to say, like, what kind of things make this fun? How can I be a fun external motivator? Something I've done in a lot of my relationships. I've even done this with Kate, is, like, come up with some sort of reward we can give the person when they get something done. Whether it's something like, recently I got all of my work done, and one of my partners, who took a bunch of pictures of me before top surgery, saved the folder of pictures and sent it over when I was done with my work for the day, right? I've sent them, I've been like, oh, I have questions that I want to ask you about the new scene we're doing, but I'm not going to ask you until you finish this project. You can create your own reward systems. And part of what was so hard for me before I was diagnosed is that I enjoyed that shit. I enjoyed playing games with people and creating motivation for myself and doing things. And it would get written off as juvenile or overly complicated. And I think kind of creating space to explore that stuff with your partner can just help kind of adapt your lifestyle to an ADHD brain a little bit better.
Totally. And I know for me personally, I don't know if it's because my brain got bored with gamifying things, but I tend to find that not as, I've tried it with myself and it doesn't work if I do it with myself. If I'll be like, if I do this work, you can watch one episode of TV. It goes away real fast. I'm like, no, I can just watch TV now, actually. It's fine.
no one is stopping
me. I know. I should not be my own boss. Anyway, but having someone to be accountable to, that is typically the motivator for me. I'm like a hardcore people pleaser. I love knowing I made the people in my life happy, or that I did something that made them feel good or something like that. So knowing that and also food motivation seems to work. Like, I hate feeding myself, which tends to be like an ADHD thing. I didn't even know that until recently.
Yeah. I get that. I'm so bad at feeding myself because I just forget that food is important.
It's not. I mean, like, I can just go eat, there's a box of crackers in the pantry. Like, why do I need to make a complicated meal? Both will sustain me.
Things aren't important until they're an emergency. Food falls into that category until my body is withering away and is like, motherfucker, we will die. Eat a goddamn vegetable. I will just sit. I'll be like, no, but I'm learning about Nordic history because someone mentioned a thing in a podcast once and I now need to know all about it. What do you mean I need to get lunch?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of those 8-hour deep dives into Google. I didn't do that today at all. Nope, not at all. I got
16 different Wikipedia pages later, and I know so much.
I feel like the average number of tabs I have open in any one of the 15 windows that are open at any given time on my computer, it's like I usually have like 25 tabs open on like 10 different windows.
They're sorted by category.
Yeah, like it's like this is the part of my brain that's working on this project, and this is the one. I also have it divided by projects because I have multiple products that I work on.
Yeah.
So like I have Google profiles. It's a whole, if anybody else looked at my computer, I think they'd have a panic attack. But for me, it works.
It makes perfect sense to me, though, because it's so much about externalizing my organizational system, because it doesn't exist in my head. So if I can visualize it outside of my head, I don't have to worry about trying to keep track of things. But we've talked a lot about ADHD in terms of, like, productivity and getting things done, because I think that's where it shows up a lot in our lives, I think. Because it's what our culture focuses so much on. But you actually have a whole workshop you do on, I wrote it down, sorry. Get your head in the game, having great sex with a noisy brain, which is, I literally just think of it as the noisy brain workshop. But every time you've run it, you've had it at the same time as I've been teaching. And I haven't been able to go to it. So really, this is just getting you on the show was just to get you to talk to me about this workshop. And it sounds like you would have tips in there that are great for folks with anxiety and other mental health things, too, that where your brain just can't shut up when you're having sex.
Yeah, I made this workshop basically because I needed it. because I, like, my brain never shuts up, ever. It just, it, like, there is no off switch. I am either thinking incessantly or I'm unconscious, and it's probably still running incessantly. But so there are tons of ways that ADHD can impact your sex life. I read one quote somewhere that said, so it was by this one really well-known ADHD doctor that was saying something along the lines of, like, I never hear anybody talk about this, but I've never met a patient who didn't have it impact their sexuality somehow. Something to that extent. Did you ask specifically about, like, how it impacts or tips? Because I've totally, like, my brain ran off with something and
yes,
I totally
to
already
all
forgot.
Of the above.
Okay, cool. Well,
let's start with how it impacts and, like, you could kind of pepper in some tips on how we can kind of compensate for these things in there as well.
Cool. So arousal is not a reflex. It requires the brain and the body to communicate with each other, and inattention and distractibility can impair all the different phases of the sexual response. If your brain's running wild, it could make it hard to get an erection or have an orgasm, especially if you're getting distracted by things. And it can also become even more challenging when you're, like, in long-term relationships or having sex with the same partner for years and years, because, like, your brain kind of, like, a little bit of the novelty wears off, and ADHD brains really love novelty.
New shiny thing, though.
Oh, God, I love new shiny.
I was actually curious about that too, because I know you've been in a relationship for 13 years, and I know that's something ADHD brains, like,
I will get to that, because I have lots of thoughts on that, because that's actually something we totally ran into. So other aspects of ADHD can also impact sex, so sometimes trouble task switching. So, like, let's say you're working all day, and you walk in the door, and your partner wants to, like, it's ready to, like, fuck you, but you're like, oh, God, I can't stop thinking about this, like, this major issue that happened at work or something stressful. And sometimes, like, even if you want to be paying attention to the thing that's happening in front of you and it's way more interesting, the thing that's happening in your brain's like, but we're still thinking about this thing. We're not done yet. So that can be difficult. Also, time management and needing a sense of urgency. So, like, urgency is one of the, like, a great way to get your brain to produce more dopamine. So, like the bill that you didn't pay, well, as soon as it showed up in my credit, I was like, oh, shit, I really needed to do that, like, 6 weeks ago. And suddenly there was a sense of urgency that hadn't been there. Whereas if you live with a partner or it's somebody, especially if you live with a partner, you might have a difficult time prioritizing sex with them, at least theoretically, because they're always available because they're there. So, like, it's not that you don't want to have sex with them. It's just, like, there's all this other new and shiny stuff that needs to be done first in your mind, or it is, like, it's just, like, this, you know, like, an inty bit more interesting at that moment.
Because the definition of urgent for an ADHD
brain, it's not like the actual dictionary definition. Like, I need to Google this right now is not, like, an actual emergency, but to me it might feel like one.
I think I've talked about, there's an episode of this show that there was a pin in front of me in a plastic wrapper and all I wanted to do was pick it up and play with it and put it on the corkboard in front of me. But it was in a plastic wrapper, and I couldn't, like, I couldn't do that because I was recording a podcast and you would hear crinkles and whatever. This isn't some ASMR shit. And for the entirety of that hour, I was staring at this banana pin sitting in front of me. Because it was the most important thing in the world.
I understand this.
And I just had to touch it. Like, I didn't... There was nothing I had to do to it except putting on the corkboard in front of me.
I know, right?
But it was so important.
It's mesmerizing somehow.
It was so important.
It doesn't even make sense when you explain it, but I know what you mean, and it does make sense.
Yeah.
And, like, another thing that might impact sex as far as ADHD brains go is time management. Like, which doesn't seem like it would really impact sex, but if you forget how much time has passed and next thing you know your partner's asleep, like, that kind of makes it hard to both engage in sex, unless that's the thing you're into, in which case go for it. But, like, and everybody's consented, but, like, you know, if you were planning on having sex while you were both awake and then you forget how time works and 12 more hours pass and something that's not a thing, like, and that happens on a regular basis, which I'm going to be honest, it, for me, it tends to. My partner likes to go to sleep early, and I get into what I'm doing and totally forget the world exists. So, yeah, that can be another thing, too.
Yeah.
But there are things that you can do to help you figure out how to navigate that. So, I think one thing I really noticed is that a lot of people, because there's not a ton of research on this, so a lot of the stuff I did when I was putting this presentation together was reading through forums because I wanted to see what people's concerns were. There's not a ton of studies on it. So a lot of people tend to read really far into their distraction and how, like, difficult of a time they were having focusing and thinking stuff about themselves, like that it meant they were a terrible partner, or maybe they're not as into or attracted to their partner as they think they were, or, like, something's wrong with the relationship. Like, don't read into it. Like, your brain just works differently, and you're going to be distracted at least some of the time. If you manage to have it be only some of the time, like, that is, you know, awesome, because I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I don't know if I ever will. Another thing is that if you don't think you can get back into whatever's happening and you don't want to continue, it's okay to totally tell the person that you're doing things with it. Like, it's not working for you. If you have something, like, really important on your mind and it's just, like, not going to happen, like, that's totally cool to communicate with the people or person that you're with. But I also tend to try to, like, do things that I know will help me. Like, if I'm having sex and I tend to get distracted in the middle or something, because I feel like at first it's easier because it's, like, it's new and shiny all of a sudden. Like, things are happening. And then there's, like, this point in the middle for me at least, and I don't know how everybody else's brains work in regard to this, where, like, sometimes you... then your brain starts picking up, like, you know, all the other thoughts that it had been thinking about. And so things that help me stay engaged would be, like, eye contact or talking, either dirty talk or otherwise.
Oh, dirty talk is so good for
me. It's so good. It's so good for, like, noisy brains because it helps keep me engaged. Now, like, it's not, I'm not just doing something. I'm, like, verbalizing, like, it's something word-wise is happening. And if you're somebody who dirty talk is too stressful, sometimes, or, like, I don't feel like talking in that time, maybe try describing what's happening into your head to yourself. That way, if you feel awkward about dirty talk, like, you can describe it in whatever way feels sexy to you, and no one else has to hear it or judge you for it if that's what you're concerned about. Also, sometimes mixing things up, so, like, switching positions, or switching toys, or adding a toy, or even moving, like, if you have your own place, to the couch, or a different part of the room. Like, something to make it new and shiny a little bit can be really great. And then suddenly you're distracted all over again. You're undistracted. I got that backwards.
Yeah.
other things that can help. I think kinky things are a really great way that a lot of people use to quiet their brains. Like, if you're into pain or even, like, sensation play, those can be really distracting in a positive, sexy way. Like, distracting from your thoughts.
That's one of the things I love about pain is that subspace is one of the few times my brain does quiet. I get, like, very floaty and dark, but I also get really overstimmed easily, during, like, sexy times and sometimes kink stuff. So I find, like, blindfolds and hoods, And any sort of sensory depth stuff allow me to get into that floaty place a little bit easier. But especially if I combined that with something grounding, like music that I know and recognize, because I can, like, it that occupies that little part of my brain that wants to float around that is running on a hamster wheel in the back. And everything else can kind of float away into that, like, pain sensation or just, like, intense stuff. Like, I do fisting, as listeners know, and things like that, where that really intense sensation can capture a lot of my attention, and can get really overwhelming if I'm not, like, blindfolded or I don't have my eyes closed. Because then on top of this really intense sensation, my brain is noticing everything.
I feel like you went to my presentation, even if you don't know it, because, like, that was, like I have, like, a list of other things written down, just, like, so don't forget them. I forget everything. Yeah. And that was, like, half of it. But, like, yes, all the things that you can do is, like, remove.
Sorry.
No, it's cool. Great minds think alike. What can I say? But easy things that you can do is, like, remove distractions, like, even before you have sex would be helpful. If you're really stressed out by having a messy room, clean it. Because if you're going to be thinking about, like, if you're going to be thinking about that, just get rid of the thing you're going to be thinking about. Adding or removing music. I have this really, luckily I've been with my partner for the partner I live with for a while, because I have this habit of putting on playlists. And of course it's a playlist I like and want to sing to. And then I can't seem to, like I'm trying not to, like, hum to it or something like that. But, like, I am very, I'm a weirdo. muting the TV or turning it off. I sometimes like it for light if I don't want to have, like, the lights on for whatever reason. Or on the other hand, keeping the lights on, because visuals are engaging. We have, like, a big mirror in our room, and I like sometimes being able to see what we're doing in the mirror, because, like, that's another way to, like, get my brain engaged, or leaving on porn is another option too. And also make sure you're comfortable, because discomfort is super distracting, especially with people, for some people with ADHD, because, physical touch can be, like, some people have sensory things as well with ADHD, and so physical touch can sometimes be like uncomfortable in certain ways. And I know that for me, like, if the sheets are bunched in the wrong way, like, underneath me, it's like, oh my god, it's like the princess and the pea, like, suddenly, like, no one else would notice it, but it is so overwhelmingly obvious to me.
It's all you can feel.
And I'm like, we need to stop what we're doing and fix this damn sheet right now. I mean, usually in a slightly less dramatic fashion, but, you know,
sometimes in exactly that much of a dramatic fashion.
Yes, and sometimes in exactly that much dramatic fashion. And what you said about gamifying things earlier, that's a really great way to, I think that sometimes you're not going to change how your brain works. It is what it is, and like, that's cool. It's not a bad thing. And also, you already know you're going to be distracted. So if you can't fix that, make it fun. So some ideas would be, like, if you are somebody who's really distracted or distractible, if you're the one with ADHD or you're easily distracted, read something sexy aloud while your partner or whoever you're with does sexy things to you, and see how long you can do it without getting distracted. And if you get distracted, you lose. But really, you all win. Watch porn while you get it on, and, like, you're not allowed to take your eyes off of it. And if you do, you lose and win. They're all kind of things you lose and win at the same time. Take turns trying to get each other off in, like, a certain amount of time, because then there's, like, a time gamified element to it. Talk about fantasies out loud while you have sex, even if that's not the thing you're doing. Like, just doing things to get your brain engaged in, like, multiple ways can be really helpful.
Yeah, I'm picturing even, like, creating... Have you ever seen those, like, little jars full of sticks that have little challenges on them, like, putting fantasies and stuff on there, and, like, pulling a new surprise challenge every time you play, or, you know, truth or dare type things? We discourage adults so much from, and we did a whole episode on gamification, but we discourage adults from playing so intensely. And I think going back to just these things that bring you joy, like, something people have noticed about me my whole life that I definitely think is a result of my ADHD is how excitable I am. Like, I had a friend tell me once, one of the reasons I'm his friend is because I'm so easy to please and get excited. And he was talking to someone else, and I was, like, reading a book or not paying attention or whatever. And he was like, hey, Bex, want a french fry? And my whole face lit up. Like, it was the best thing anyone had ever given to me was this, like, single Wendy's french fry. And I was like, thank you! But it, like, I can experience that level of excitement and joy at, like, so many things. Everything is wondrous and, like, amazing and joyful and exciting.
People with ADHD tend to have a ton of energy and excitement. It's, I don't know either, but I love how excited you get about things. I get the same way, and I love people who are, like, equally emphatic about, like, the smallest, silliest, but awesomest things. And, like, yeah, it's fantastic. Someone bought me, like, a friend bought me, picked me up from the train station, and, like, I like marshmallows. Whatever. And they brought a bag of marshmallows for me, and I think I thanked them 100 times. I was like, they did this really nice, I was, like, telling everybody, I was like, this person did this great thing for me. I'm like, it's a fucking bag of marshmallows, but I was so damn excited, because it was thoughtful, and it was nice, and it made me happy.
Yeah, and I think culturally, we discourage people from following joy because we encourage them to follow things like productivity and success, whatever arbitrary definition of that you have, which is, I think, why our culture isn't super built for ADHDers, because I think we're more prone to wanting to pursue joy, things that give us that fun and excitement. And I think recognizing that, if you're a person with ADHD or you have a partner with ADHD, and recognizing those things that spark joy, or however you want to say it, and give you that, like, moment of, like, oh my god, and following that and doing more things in line with that.
Yeah, it's just a good life like life advice. I think we all need more of that in our lives.
We really do.
And it's okay if it's super unproductive to do whatever makes you happy some of the time. Like, we have to live our lives and stuff, but, like, you know, just pointless happy things are nice too.
Yeah.
Totally.
And so we're running a little long, which I expected because we are us. But I did want to, I'm sure we've dropped many threads that I have forgotten so far because that is the nature of an ADHD conversation. But the one I remember, we talked about long-term relationships. And yes. I do want to touch a little bit on how ADHD can impact our relationships in those ways, because I know for me, ADHDers, we touched on this a little bit. We experience something called hyperfocus, which is where we're able to focus entirely on something for hours on end, and it's the most exciting thing in the world, and our brain will kind of ruminate on it, and it's really all our brain wants to focus on until our brain is done with that.
Forever, most likely.
Yeah, exactly. but I think that is a thing that overlaps a lot with NRE and can make NRE really intense for ADHD brains. But then our aversion to boredom can make more established, longer-term relationships, that new shiny goes away, and it can be a lot harder to maintain. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts around that.
I do. So this is something, my partner and I were monogamous for many, many years and decided like 3 years ago to open up a relationship. And then also that kind of coincided with like a lot of other life changes. And also this kind of realization that we were long distance for a long time and now we live together full time. So like, it's not as new and shiny because I don't miss him all the time because we were really far apart before. And so like, we've had some conversations around the fact that like, it feels to him that I'm more interested to see other new friends. And even though that's not the case, I love spending time with him, but it definitely doesn't come across in all the same ways, probably because I'm like, I get a lot of friend NRE lately about people and like, you know, that kind of things. And so things that we figured out that really have helped us a lot would be, I love new shiny things. So now we go do new shiny things together. And that's really great. We save, like, if it's a show I'm really dying to watch, I'll watch it with him. If I want to start a new project and it's something he can do with me, like we'll do a project together. I fucking love projects. They are my happy place. all of them, all the trillion ones I've started and haven't finished are my happy place. sometimes they get finished, who knows? But yeah, incorporating the person that you care about or the person that you're in a relationship with into the things that make you feel those new shiny, feelings that you mm-hmm. that you like as an ADHD person can really help. Because then you're excited about everything about it. You know, like it's exciting. And then that kind of it gets passed on to that person. Suddenly it's exciting because they're there too. And, you know, if it's a person you care about, you're going to be happy about that, even if it's not like that new shiny happy feeling, which I think looks a little bit different to most people.
And you can kind of associate that energy with them.
Mm-hmm. I think that kind of helps like your brain stay engaged with all those things. And then they become a person that you can do all these new shiny things with. And that's really exciting because spending time with them gets you all the new shiny things.
Exactly.
So I think that, I asked him this question with like, just as like, I was like, is there anything I forgot about? And I forgot about. And he was like, no, he was like, that's really all we've been doing. And it works great. So I know that might not work for everybody, but I definitely think it's a good place to start.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I resonate with what you talked about with like long distance things. Cause I definitely could see how that can be, that could engage an ADHD brain really well.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it wasn't. So we went to college like several hours apart. And then for a couple years, I was commuting back and forth to work in New York City. And we were living in upstate New York. So I'd be gone for a couple of days a week. And then we lived together the rest of the time. And so we weren't necessarily long distance, but I was only there half the week. And we didn't move in together until like 2014, like full time, where we both lived in the same place all the time. And it was just, I was like, wow, I hated long distance, but also there was some part of me that liked the independence it gave me and the fact that it was always feeling new and shiny. And that was something I hadn't even realized worked for my brain in a way that was actually really positive in some ways. So
yeah, I'm a person who loves looking forward to things, having something exciting on the horizon. Even regardless of what that thing is, like I have a date tonight and we planned what we're going to watch tonight in advance because I wanted to get excited to watch that movie. Like I wanted to have time to get excited about whatever thing we were watching. I was like, it's raining outside. I want to know if we're watching something spooky because I want to build up all of that anticipatory energy. Like, so I could definitely see how that energy there, like alone, can be really fun.
I wonder if that's an ADHD thing. Sometimes I have friends who have ADHD and we'll both say something and realize how into it we both are and then be like, this must be an ADHD thing. Because ironically, I tend to learn more from people who have ADHD than any research has ever been published. I love having something to look forward to. If I have nothing on my calendar to look forward to, I will instantly get very sad. It makes it harder for me to function. I get, like, mopey.
Yeah, one of the best things I did for my brain was start planning one or two events that I was excited about every week. Just so I have something exciting coming up, something on the horizon, even if that's, like, a new season of this show comes out this day and I'm gonna watch it. Like, tomorrow my exciting thing is watching the LGBTQ forum. Like, I'm watching political stuff, but I'm like, I'm gonna sit and eat ice cream and watch politics. Just having something I am the same way. Yeah,
it's like some part of me hates schedules, another part of me likes it. I don't know. I find it really helpful, and like planning with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are a little past time. That's fine. It's a long episode. We have ADHD. We're like this. This is what happens. But I want to thank you for coming on and talking to me about this and helping me kind of explore my new diagnosis, because as you might expect around any new diagnosis, I'm having all of the feelings right now. But I want to thank you for coming on and talking to us about this, or me, rather, and us. There are folks listening, or there will be. Anyway. You can just let us know where folks can find you and all your cool stuff.
Cool. You can check out all my sex education work at hedonish.com. That's H-E-D-O-N-I-S-H. Or follow me on Twitter and Instagram or Facebook at hedonish. And if you are somebody who likes going to queer play parties, especially in the Philadelphia region, you can check out the play party business that I co-own, glittergasmevents.com.
They're fantastic. I've heard great things. This is the part where I close out the show, but Kate usually does it, so hang on.
What are we supposed to say? I can help.
I, like, got to the ending, and I was like, shit, what do I do? Okay. We're going to try and make our way through this. Don't look at me. I got this. All right. She does the whole I have been Kate Sloan. All right. And I'm Bex. You can find my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're at, well, Kate and I are the Dildorks. Oh, shit. Okay. I'm Bex. You can find my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. You're listening to The Dildorks. You can find The Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram at The Dildorks and at TheDildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts and makes us easier for other folks to find. You can also go to patreon.com/TheDildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way and help us keep doing what we're doing. I want to thank Amy for our podcast art and Protodome for our theme song. He's at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. I did the thing!
That was a lot to remember. Eyes closed.
All right, so I'm gonna start and I'm gonna say Kate's part and I'm gonna pretend I remember Kate's part. And then I will just
kind of. It's the who are you friend part, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like Kate's gonna enjoy listening to us trying to figure out how Kate does things.
She always. I feel like she laughs at me because I put on my Kate voice when I do it too, because the only way I remember it is in Kate's voice. So.
Life hack. Does it sound like?
So I say it like. With the inflection. Anyway, she's going to listen to all of this later. But, so yeah, you saw in the email, I mean, so you know what questions we're doing, and you saw in the email, we edit it, and I think you've listened to the show, right?
Yes, which is why I'm nervous. I don't listen to podcasts. Yours is the only one I occasionally listen to. And so I'm like, I listen to this one. Other people I know listen to this one. Like, it's just, my table is an ironing board right now, so I'm classy.
Perfect. Love it. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I did it.
Yay!
Woohoo!
So yeah, she can take that snippet of audio, and if that's lined up, then everything else is.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Does Kate do all the...
Yes, I don't know how it works. She does all the editing.
Magical human.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a podcast. She's amazing. She's a goddamn blessing.
Worst case scenario, I would just read what I wrote, and then I won't sound like I'd probably sound like a robot, but I wouldn't sound like an idiot robot. So.
But you would be a smart robot, yeah.
I'd be a smart robot, so.
A robot who knows about ADHD.
Yeah. A robot with executive dysfunction and brain fog. Cool.
Sounds like a programming error. That's my new gender.
That's your new what?
That's my new gender. Robot with executive dysfunction.